Hey, we've got a great show for you on the Edge today. We'll be chatting live with Brewers of Indiana Guild on all things beer, which is fantastic, as well as a group of local professionals who have created an event fostering employee engagement and strengthening company culture. That's EX Summit coming up all today on Edge of Indy.
Your audio and video source featuring Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. This is Edge of Indy, broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Let's get today's conversation started.
Hey, welcome back to Edge of Indy, and thanks so much for joining us on our Facebook Live internet television broadcast. I want to start using that as a model there.
It's a bit of a mouthful, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of is. So we're edgecasting on a regular basis here on Facebook. So this is Edge of Indy. If you haven't checked out the show before, we're focusing on all things local as it applies to Indianapolis. Entrepreneurs, innovators, movers and shakers. We also feature people, organizations that are out there helping make Indianapolis an awesome place to live and work. So we ask you often to learn about local and choose local. That's what Edge of Indy is all about. So thanks for joining us today. I'm Aaron Sparks, your host, CEO of Site Strategics, as well as Edge Media Studios. It is on the screen. Oh, yeah, that's who I am. On top of that, we also have Caleb Handsome Dan. He's our SEO specialist here at Site Strategics. Caleb, how are you doing, sir?
Very well.
And I'm going to... that's it? So how's the beard doing?
Fantastic.
Exactly. That's what I was hoping to hear. thanks for joining us on the show. It's always a treat to have you. And wow, what you drinking there, Caleb?
This is Barn Phantom Goza from Triton Brewing out in the Lawrence area.
So we have beer on the show again.
Indeed we do. That's why I'm here.
That's the only time that you... So let me introduce you to our guests who brought this wonderful elixir. This is Rob Caputo, Executive Director, and Tristan Schmid, and Communications Director of Brewers of Indiana Guild. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. Thank you for bringing such a wonderful treat for us.
Our pleasure. No problem. We had to do a little running around today, but we pulled it together.
You look stressed.
That's what we do.
It's hard. It's hard working for beer.
It's hard working for beer. Okay, well, I doubt that. We've had a couple brewers on the show, have we not?
Yeah, Daredevil and Upland.
That's right. That's right. So let's drill through some Indiana beer facts, shall we? There are more than 135 craft breweries here in Indiana. That is fantastic. There's nearly 8,000 full-time employees in Indiana's craft brewing industry that created economic impact of more than $1 billion. Those are huge numbers. So tell us more about the Guild of Indiana Brewers.
Well, we have been around as a nonprofit trade group since 2000, founded by John Hill, who founded Broad Ripple Brew Pub, which is Indiana's longest-running microbrewery.
Okay.
And it was really started to help the efforts of small breweries like John, Lafayette Brewing Company, Bloomington Brewing Company, some of the founding fathers, so to speak, of brewing in the state. Uh-huh. And we found that over the years, it really was important that we get as much support, especially at the State House, to make this industry what it is today. So we're up to almost 150 breweries in the state. I've been with the Guild now for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And when I was hired 3 years ago, there were about just a little over half as many breweries as there are today. So it's a very fast-growing industry, and legislation is just as important today as it was 17 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's a key component of our mission. The fact that you can get growlers for carryout on Sundays from local breweries is thanks to the Guild's efforts.
Oh, fantastic.
Tomlinson Tap Room, the fact that you can get growlers from there and go in there and basically have whatever you like from their entire lineup of Indiana breweries is, again, thanks to lobbying efforts. And
I assume you guys were probably heavily involved back when Sun King and Three Floyd were trying to get the limits raised, right?
Yeah, we had some involvement with that as well.
Yeah.
You know, and they had their own lobbyists as well, because you got to work this from, obviously, the udder is pretty big down there, so you got to work a lot of different areas of it. And so they had their own thing going on, and we try to stay as aligned as we can in those situations where somebody's actually doing their own thing to make sure that we're helping pull the rope the same way. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of things going on at the State House. It's going to get super interesting again the next couple years based on this last session. So we'll see how that impacts our industry. And that's what we've got to do, is keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening and what those impacts might be from a local brewery level. Because right. there are fair trade practices, that kind of thing, Sunday sales, cold sales, that kind of thing that you see. You know, a lot of talk about that over the past few years.
Absolutely. So. And if I could just jump into that, I mean, just the blue laws in this state, right? How much impact are you having? You're certainly kind of cracking the edifice with the growlers, right? And be able to purchase those on Sunday. But, I mean, what is the chance that, well, one, for the audience that doesn't know what the blue laws are, can you explain why you can't buy beer on Sunday?
Well, this, honestly... much the same as the, you know, the reason you couldn't have beer at the state fair. These go back to some historical whatever. And I'm not exactly sure coming out of Prohibition what that was really. I mean, if you look at the objections to that right now, it's the, hey, we don't want to make this available 7 days a week. It's the holy day. It's a Sabbath, whatever that is.
Right.
And it's also the, hey, we're helping to make alcohol less convenient at a certain point. And really at this point in time, it's become this kind of David versus Goliath thing between, the big box grocery stores and the liquor stores. And I think that's where the fight is now. And honestly, this is kind of like the Hatfields and McCoys. Nobody knows why they're feuding, and nobody knows why these are on the books anymore until it actually drops. And then everybody will give you the history of that, you know?
Right.
And that's what's fascinating to me as we dive into some of this, is, you know, how do we, as an organization, help our members maintain some of the benefits that they have right now with the law, but also look at what's best for the industry as a whole and the state as a whole and the consumer at the end of the day. So how does that positively affect everyone? And that's really the challenge. While we're at the State House, a lot of the things that we are working on actually inevitably benefit the consumer. And I think you'll see that with the Sunday sales and that kind of thing as far as growlers go. So. You know, we do have the cold sales, Sunday sales thing, which obviously are two big hot button issues that you're going to see, you know, the next couple of years based on what just went down. So,
and when was that actually, Bill, put into law?
Which one? The
the growler sales and the cold.
What was that?
2007, I believe, or around then.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, I've only been doing this ED thing for 2 years. I used to be on the board, so I've kind of moved. I'm an insider now.
Gotcha. Well,
on the other side.
Speaking of insiders, how does membership work, how can people get active with the guild?
Well, we have three levels of membership that we represent, and to Rob's point about looking out for consumers who love local craft beer, consumers are a key component of our membership. So we just launched a year ago at our 21st annual Indiana Microbrewers Festival. We launched the Indiana Beer Brigade, and that's basically consumer-level membership where anyone, as long as they're 21 years of age or older, can basically buy into the Brewers of Indiana Guild through the Indiana Beer Brigade. And the thing that makes this program really special is a collaborative brewing component. So when you become a member of the Brigade, which you can do so either at our upcoming festival on July 29th or at brigade.beer, you are then invited to a series of parties across the state where we roll out an annual collaboration beer. So last year, Three Floyds was kind enough to host the first collaboration that was between, of course, Three Floyds, the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and all of our members in Northwestern Indiana. Mm-hmm. And we worked together on the style of beer, the recipe, the name. We were up there for the collaboration brew day, the bottling. And then a couple months later, we rolled out Corn King IPA, which was a corn-based IPA with locally grown, locally malted corn at parties only for Brigade members across the state. So... There are brewers guilds in every state of the union and DC, and we're quite certain that we're the only guild that has done this kind of collaborative enthusiast program for consumer members. Yeah,
you almost want an armband, you know, to be able to wear. So, I mean, anybody can be part of the Brigade, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually just brewed this coming year's collab beer this week, past week actually, at Sun King, Indiana Imperial Stout. It's going to be pretty interesting.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, you big beer lovers. Actually, Tristan talked us into this because he's a big Russian Imperial Stout guy. So he's like, can we just do a big 10.5 percenter?
Yeah.
So that'll be, yeah. So,
yeah, but this is not a Russian Imperial Stout. This is an Indiana Imperial Stout.
Absolutely.
So we're local.
So what makes it, so I assume.
And patriotic.
Like, yeah. So I assume like with Corn King, a lot of the malt and hops and everything was sourced locally?
So we used some smoke malt from Sugar Creek Malt, and it was actually smoked with bourbon barrel staves.
Ooh. Oh, you're killing it.
So it's smoked into the malt, and then we've obviously used, there's some milk sugar in there for some sweetness, some biscuit malt to give it kind of this graham crackery thing. So this is kind of this chocolatey, sweet, s'mores-y type of thing that we're targeting for this year. And that's going to be actually packaged up here a couple of months before the party so that some of the heat should come off from that high alcohol content of the beer. So, it's going to be fun. We're working with Sun King right now on the art. It's called Stuck in the Middle. Dave Colt over there was feeling stuck in the middle with 40-some-odd central regional brewers. So I think it's going to be interesting. You'll be able to sample that actually at Indiana Microbrewers Fest. We're actually going to have a keg. We did a small batch of that just to test the recipe out because there were so many kind of wild card ingredients. So it should be good. You'll be able to sample that at our booth at the Brewers of Indiana Guild booth at the festival coming up here on the 29th.
Awesome.
Okay. There's a number of things I need to do. One, we have to be members of the Indiana Brewers Guild. I mean, we're going to have to be part of the brigade. I mean, we're not brewers, but we are absolutely going to champion that. Awesome. And the reason why we don't have that particular stout today is because it's not ready yet.
Correct. So the first batch is actually going into bourbon barrels for release next year.
Got it.
And we've got we'll have one keg of that available for the festival. So I asked them to pull that off, carb it up. You know, so we has a little bit of fizz to it, and then the rest is going into bourbon barrels. So,
how do we get into the front of that line?
Hey, you got to know somebody. I wonder who that might be.
I know a couple guys here. So the event. Let's talk about the event. July 29th coming up here. It's the annual Indiana Microbrewers Festival. So tell us about that, the details around it, and what attendees can actually expect.
So this is the second longest running beer fest in the state and one of the biggest, 22 years old now. And it was really started out, again, by John Hill back in the day as a fundraiser, actually for the Humane Society of Indianapolis. And then when the Guild started, it became a primary fundraiser for the Guild. So as I mentioned, we're a nonprofit.
Right.
Almost all of our revenue comes from our four annual festivals. So this event is a good time for attendees and brewers, but it's also crucial to keeping the Guild alive and effective. And so really initially it was started to represent the brewers. So that's another core component of our membership along with the consumers. Mm-hmm. We really started to represent their interests. And so now at this festival on the 29th, we're going to have over 100 Indiana breweries and guests. So we'll have some local cideries, meaderies, in addition to, I think the number of Indiana breweries is up to like 76 or so that are going to be there.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And basically you get a 3-ounce sampler glass, mm-hmm. and you can have as many samples of as many beers as you can responsibly drink. And so
challenge accepted.
Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, you can go to beer fest and drink unlimited amounts of alcohol. Right. That's not true. I mean, let's face it. But it's going to be a good party. It's in Military Park for the third year in a row now. It's cool. It goes by many names. A lot of people call it Microfest, Summerfest, but it's one of the granddaddies of the fest scene in Indiana. And one really exciting new thing that we're doing this year, in addition to rolling out this year's Indiana Beer Brigade beer for sampling, is during the early bird hour from 2 p.m. until 3 p.m., if you have early bird tickets, you get access to what we're calling the early bird exclusives tent. So there are going to be 21 breweries bringing really cool beers, and they're all listed at the website, which is indianabeerfest.com. Mm-hmm. So go to indianabeerfest.com. You can see those 21 breweries and what they're bringing to the exclusives tent. And we call it exclusives because at 3 p.m., those beers are all taken offline, and you can't get them at the fest anywhere else. So if you're a connoisseur of beer, and especially if you've been to the festival before as a GA attendee, early bird's an amazing way to go. And if I were buying tickets, I am going, but I'm not buying tickets. But if I were buying tickets, I would totally go to the
early bird's the way to go.
Yeah. It's fun after 3 p.m. too, but these exclusives, I mean, there's quite a list of astounding beers on it.
Now, the Brigade, does the Brigade get any particular perks with this festival?
Not this time, but we at past festivals, we've rolled out ticket sales to Brigade members and different deals. That's another component of the membership program. Cool. So you get an Indiana Beer Brigade shirt, and you get a digital membership card, which gets you different discounts and things throughout the year as well.
Yeah.
And the festival still part, you guys partner with other nonprofits for that as well, too,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. And the key thing for us, I know a lot of festivals or events will take the sum total of what the revenue was and donate a percentage. And $3 from every ticket sale go directly to that, whether it's a designated driver ticket for $10. So 30% of your designated driver ticket goes to our charity partner.
That's awesome.
Right off the top. So we immediately, when you make a purchase, that there is money being taken out of that that's going to our charity partner. So we want to make sure that we are consistently giving money to our local charity partners, whether we're in Bloomington or downtown here.
Can you name some of the charity partners?
Fire away, Tristan.
Yeah, for the summer festival, it's Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Indiana.
Fantastic. So absolutely. Great organization.
Yeah, combating blood cancers. They're an admirable organization with an Indiana chapter. Mm-hmm. For Winterfest, it's Joy's House, so adult day service. They're doing amazing things for folks who can no longer care well for themselves and helping those families out who might be the full-time care providers, just kind of easing the burden on them. They have a scholarship fund for people who have difficulty paying for that care. And actually, I have a good friend whose father was in a recipient of Joy's House's services right near the end of his life, and they do amazing work. So we're proud to partner with them for Winterfest. And then
Lotus.
Bloomington, yeah, Lotus Arts Arts Education Organization in Bloomington is our partner for our spring festival down in Bloomington.
Well, we also, I know for, like, if you go to Winterfest, you go to the Coat Check, that's a separate charity component. There's a bunch of different charity components. We have a different organization, Parking Cars in Bloomington, that's collecting the money from that. We don't get anything from that. We just, that's part of what we do. So we just try to get the local communities involved. So if we ever go to Southern Indiana or Northern Indiana and set up a festival, we'll work with our breweries up in that area to determine what a charity partner, a good charity partner would be for us in those areas. So that's an important component of this on top of, you know, what the money that we collect allows us to do from a marketing or a, you know, education or, you know, lobbying efforts.
Right.
So they're, you know, I mean, we try to make sure that we're community focused. So
I think it does actually come, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it comes naturally with the relationship that you have with the brewers across the country, across the state, have with their community. I mean, they're vested, and I mean, there's a lot of microbrewers, you know, individuals that call themselves brewers, and that's fantastic from an art form. But the people that start a company, start a brewery, right? They are absolutely geo-targeted, and they're wanting to lift up that respective area of the state, right? So they know they're plugged in to everything, and they know who needs your help.
Yeah, we've got some interesting, some of our members have some interesting charity components when you go into their tap rooms. So around the state, you've got some, it's not just about an event. You know, if you go to South Bend Brew Works, they've got a, you know, when you purchase something, you get to choose which charity your donation goes to, you know, kind of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of community involvement. There's a lot of local community support. And we try to do the same thing. I mean, at a certain point, you want to try to lead by example.
Yep.
And we've been doing that since the inception of these events. So, and again, it's a continuously growing thing for us, but it's also something that's important to us as part of our mission. While it might not say that on the website, when you're looking at what our mission is, that is an important component for us wherever we are as far as community focus. In local communities and giving back to those communities. We're not one of these traveling beer festivals who comes in, takes everybody's ticket money, and then runs to the next state.
Right.
So,
well, speaking of other states, are there guilds across the country similar to yours?
Yeah, every state. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Everybody's got one. And we actually, there are a lot of national guild events that we attend. We attend a series of Craft Brewers Conference, rotates around the country every year. There's a series of educational things associated with that. Great American Beer Fest. We're out there working a booth. There's actually a Guild's booth area there, which if you ever go to Great American Beer Fest, I would suggest going to that area because all of the beers being poured by the state guilds are beers that are not being poured on the floor. So
there are
a bunch of, you know, I mean... If you're a KBS fan, I know 2 years ago founders gave KBS to the Michigan Brewers Guild, so the only place that you could get, you know. So there's all these kind of like hidden gems in this area.
Got it.
But there's a big support there. We do a bunch of meetings out there. We also will be up in Madison, Wisconsin in a couple of weeks. There will be our summer National Guilds gathering as part of the Great Taste of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that. And then there's just a lot of interaction as far as
pay an issue comes up, and there's a lot of interaction online, email, phone calls, that kind of thing. So we all know one another. And it's great sharing information, because if something's happening in some state at a macro level, from a big beer company or whatever, that may eventually get to our state. It's not, it's, hey, we had some success, let's go somewhere else. So we've got to stay on top of that, and it's a great opportunity for us to keep our finger on the pulse here and then share our experiences and hopefully help some other folks in another state that may be getting ready to fight that same battle or maybe fighting the same battle that we're fighting. So
along those lines, have you guys had any conversations with the folks from like your counterparts in Minnesota? Because weren't they working on Sunday sales maybe in the past year or two?
Yeah, you know, I believe they were, and I think that thing just went down. We because of the situation here with our members being able to sell on Sunday, you know, for us, we've just kind of taken a little bit of a backseat to this. I think it will benefit a goodly number of our members who actually package and sell from a volume perspective.
Sure.
But, you know, there is a benefit to our smaller members who may be the only game in town, you know. But, you know, from a cold beer sales perspective, which you've seen, I think it's imperative from our membership that from a quality perspective that, that's an important thing for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're going to see some of these things probably have some very interesting and possibly contentious discussions at the State House the next couple of sessions. But I think at the end of the day, it'll benefit the consumer. I know that they're very focused on consumer-driven initiatives and looking at those old blue laws and post pre-prohibition and prohibition laws that probably don't hold up so well after 80, 90 years. So it's going to be an interesting thing. I was at Craft Brewers Conference early May when the whole thing was going down with the Rickers cold beer and all that stuff. Once it went national, I think that, you know, I had people asking me about it and I had no clue what was going on because I'm out in D.C. And at that point, I think you've got folks now that are kind of like, okay, this has happened. This is how many times that this has happened. Let's take a good hard look at this and see what we can do.
Well, that's the thing, is that you're bringing awareness, not only at the state level, but you're all talking to each other. All the guilds are working with each other, and it's no longer a government monopolized set of standards. I mean, we are a nation, and there are some acceptable levels of taxation and acceptable local laws. At the same time, get with the times.
Yeah, and the Brewers Association out in Boulder, Colorado, does a great job. They've got a guild person specifically that handles the state guild. So they're kind of this umbrella that we all kind of operate under, and we're all members of the Brewers Association. And they have a ton of resources available online and a lot of resource sharing with us.
Yep.
And, you know, we, you know, for instance, when I was in D.C., we're doing the hill climb. So, you know, I'm with Clay Robinson from Sun King, and we're walking around knocking on senators and House of Representatives' doors and talking about tax
modernization. Oh, man, I bet that's a conversation.
Yeah. So we're talking.
First time he's ever worn a suit, I think.
Yeah, probably. I got a rash. You should have seen it, man. I had to go buy calamine lotion. It was terrible. But anyway, so we're on Capitol Hill, and we're walking around and pushing for some of the national tax reform initiatives, and then talking to folks from here in the state about what, you know, they might be able to help us with as well. So there's a lot of that. We do some legislative events here as well. We're active with that outside of just what happens during session. So there is, you know, there's a lot of dialogue that goes on, despite the fact that it's summer and everything's kind of calm. There still is a lot of dialogue that goes on, whether that's on a federal, you know, national level or locally here. So, you know, and that's the way it's got to be. I mean, things move a lot quicker these days when you can communicate immediately.
Absolutely.
You know, back in the day, you had to wait for somebody to have the pigeon drop off the note, and now it's, you know, hey, I just hit send. So
or you edgecast.
Exactly.
Gratuitous plug. So that's fantastic. So I do want to wrap up with some words of inspiration for young brewers that have been doing their craft for a while that want to step in to the professional light. Can you give us some guidance or any resources that they should plug into, let alone the guild, right?
Well, we've got a brewery and planting membership, so we do have 10, 11 brewery and planting memberships, and your membership fee actually gets you, if you get open within the year that you're paying for,
yeah,
that pays your membership dues no matter what your production is. And that's a
very cool.
It's structured based on barrelage. So the more barrels you produce, the higher that would be. So we have that available. We've got some other membership programs for people who produce products that aren't beer, but also support the industry. Mm-hmm. So other local companies. But one of the things, the first thing I ask people, if they want to get into this industry, do you want to be a brewer or do you want to be a brewer owner? Because if you're a brewer owner, it's a completely different animal than if you're a brewer. And if you want to be a brewer, then go
have fun.
Yeah, go catch on with a brewery, clean kegs, work your way up, learn the craft, and be a shift brewer or whatever.
Right.
If you want to be a brewer owner, understand that you're probably not going to brew at some point because you're going to be doing human resources. You know, safety, accounting, all those other
things.
About
it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Understood, huh?
Yep. Absolutely. So. No, that's a thing. And you're also helping those brewer owners on and standardizing on some information on how they go about doing certain things in their own organizations, right?
Yeah. And we have the annual Indiana Brewers Conference as well. So we have the third one in March. And that's a great way not only for the brewers to get together in a setting where they don't have to serve consumers like at a beer fest.
Yep.
But also to share information. We have many, many sessions on business operations, technical brewing, marketing, that kind of stuff.
Cool.
And so we have online forums and all kinds of resources for the brewers and affiliated businesses even to exchange knowledge and help each other out.
Well, and that's the nice thing about the brewing and planning program is it gets you access to these kinds of resources that John Q. Public can't just walk in.
Well,
and
I got to ask, what beer actually gets served at a brewer's conference?
Oh, everything you can imagine. I mean, they bring their big guns, the beers that they're most proud of. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, we should mention what we brought on set today.
Oh, yeah.
These are actually the top three beers in the Indiana Brewers Cup this year. So Daredevil, whom you recently had on, their German Pilsner won the best in show of the hundreds and hundreds of beers that were judged there.
I know when Michael was here, he was particularly proud of that one. So
yeah, it's a great beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's it deserved it. Barn Phantom Ghosts, actually we don't have the blueberry version, but that was finished second best in show.
Oh, cool.
And then Weizen Gut from Beer, who finished second in the Brewers Cup competition behind Daredevil. That was third in the best of show.
I don't see a stout there.
Conference. Well,
there's one brewing right now.
Literally. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, it's been a pleasure learning more about the Brewers Guild and what you're doing for Indiana Brewers. And it's great to be able to witness such a growth of this industry and a stabilization of the industry and just a give back from all these brewers and the community relationships they have. I mean, just to give a shout out to Sun King. They literally tie into 350, if not more, organizations and causes here in the state of Indiana. That is amazing to see one company doing that, and they're kind of nudging everybody else along in the state of Indiana to be able to give back, right?
Yeah. We are very proud of our membership for what they do, and there's a concept of the local brewpub being the third place. So people go to work, they go home. In between that, they might stop at their local brewpub, and I found personally that's very, very true. I love going to these places and meeting the people who come to those places almost every day, and seeing how the breweries help those people too. It's pretty incredible.
Fantastic. Well, any last thoughts for the brewers community or the consumers that just love Indiana beer?
Yeah. Tickets on sale right now. There are a few early bird tickets for Indiana Microbrewers Festival at indianabeerfest.com. And we have an app called the Drink Indiana Beer app. It's available on Android and iPhones. And then we also have the magazine, Drinkin' Magazine, which we work with Emmis on that every year. And you can find those at your local brewery and online.
Absolutely. So we'll have all these links on the show notes for the show. Obviously, the show is going to be coming out. Hopefully, we're going to get out in the next couple of days. But the 29th is coming up real quick. Yep. And we certainly want to give shout out to all the brands and all the organizations that are helping the Guild. You can track down Tristan over at, how do they connect with you guys on the socials? What's your Twitter accounts?
So we are on Twitter and Instagram at Drink Indiana and Facebook.com/Drink Indiana.
Fantastic. We also have, for the Indiana Beer Brigade, we have IN Beer Brigade as well as another account that's out there, right?
Yep, that's on Twitter and Instagram, and then the website for that is brigade.beer. Our website for the Brewers of Indiana Guild is drinkin.beer.
I love it.
And if an Imperial Stout floats your boat, definitely stop by our booth at the festival. You get to try this year's beer, which is nice. Last year, that was not an option. So good opportunity to try it and look for updates on artwork and all the other fun things that go.
Cool.
And that glassware will change. Last year, this was a recommendation from Three Floyds. Dave Colt will be recommending this year's glassware. It will change with the beer. So every year is a different opportunity to not get the same pint glass, so shaker pint. So everybody's got enough of those. So
yep.
So 29th, and the early bird is when?
2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
What do you think about that, Caleb? Do you think we can actually muster up a visit out there?
It's a silly question.
If you
I just want to see your expression.
If you work for the Brewers Guild, early bird is 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And we'll get out of there about 9 p.m. It's a fun day, but it's a long day. But it's well worth it. We enjoy it, and hopefully we'll see a lot of folks out there. It's going to be
absolutely
a good time.
So we certainly want to lift and we'll give you some additional support this next week coming up into the festival. Thanks for your work with the Guild. It is a nonprofit organization, and you're also looking for sponsorships regularly?
Yeah, sponsorships for all of our annual festivals, and then we have the briefly mentioned it, the affiliate membership, which allows any company that doesn't actually brew to become a member of the Guild and support the local craft beer industry.
Again, a lot of gears going on over.
Forgot to bring the program notes for that. We'll send it to you via email.
Absolutely, or carrier pigeon. Whatever,
yeah, exactly.
Whichever you want.
Hey, the pigeon will work.
Does the pigeon bring beer?
Very tiny ones.
Yeah. You're going to need a super strong Mike Tyson pigeon to do that.
Is it African or European pigeon? Never mind. Sorry, just channel some Monty Python there. All right.
Very good. I did note that. Very good.
Thank you so much, guys. And I really appreciate the time. And we're certainly going to traipse out there and get some samples and just support our local community. It's fantastic what you guys are doing.
Okay. Terrific. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem. All right. Coming up next, we are going to be joined by Stefan Vincent, founder of EX Summit and director. He's the director of Fusion Alliance as well as a familiar face who will be welcoming back, but with a different name, coming up right after this. Edge Media Studios is kind of an organic love child of site strategics. We moved down downtown Indianapolis with a mission. The mission was to kind of give a home to our five-year podcast. It's been a fantastic ride. We've got great downloads for our show, but we had to take it up a notch. We wanted to control the aesthetic of the show, but we also wanted to create an environment where other companies could do their podcast. The studio was a vision, a part of the entire move process. So we moved down and we built out a custom studio that I guarantee is the best in the city for this type of execution. And then on top of that, what evolved out of that was the entire live casting or edge casting experience on the road. The entire studio is mobile. It's completely self-contained. Our entire mixing board, all of our cameras, all of our mics, everything goes with us. We are a self-contained unit, and we can actually broadcast anywhere for any type of event and do the exact same social activation and awareness factor. And we can also reskin the entire thing. So our backdrops, everything can be corporately branded. So we're actually part of your entire organization and bringing such a cutting edge to your brand. We have pan, tilt, zoom optical cameras that are completely remote controlled from one console, one computer. So we can map all the different faces, we can map all the different two shot, single shot, large, wide shots, all over IP connected cameras. Everything self-contained and everything programmed so we can immediately go back to that. So we don't need multiple cameramen, everything's coming from one deck. It's completely unique to Facebook Live. It's completely unique to any type of live cast that you can see. It's TV quality production. We're taking on all the learning curves so you don't have to. I think Edge Media Studios represents a key character factor of Site Strategics. Part of our mission, part of our goals are to be pioneers in digital technology and digital marketing. It's an emblem or a symbol of what our entire organization is focused on, is to take chances, be able to blaze trails, and be able to define spaces before anybody else does. And Edge Media Studios represents that type of initiative.
This is Edge of Indy, showcasing Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. Broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Now, let's get back to today's topic.
Okay, welcome back to Edge of the of Indy. Boy, I trip over that sometimes. We've got a couple shows here, Edge of the Web, Edge of Indy. But you know what? You're on Edge of Windy, and don't ever forget it. So welcome back. I'm Aaron Sparks, and I want to introduce somebody to you that you may know, familiar face, but with a different name. We actually have Brittany Simpson. How did that happen, Brittany?
Just a little thing called a wedding.
A wedding. Yeah. So we got to ask, where'd you go?
We eloped to Vancouver, Canada, and we don't regret it at all.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. No, it was a great time.
Congratulations, and certainly proud of you. And Ryan's a fantastic guy. So he unfortunately did take you away for a couple of weeks. I'm a bit tweaked at him, but you know, I'll forget him.
He needs to get back in your good graces.
I'm thinking so.
I know. I understand. He'll bring you beer. It's okay.
And meat.
Yeah. And exactly.
There we go. Okay, on that note, hey, we wanted to introduce to you an event coming up on the 3rd of August? Yes, it's coming up very, very soon. It's EX Summit, and I'd like to introduce to you some of the speakers and the founder of EX Summit. This is Stefan Vincent, founder of EX Summit, as well as director of marketing at Fusion Alliance. We also have Julie Barker, who is the senior director over at Global HR over at Aprio, as well as Max Yoder, co-founder and CEO of Lessonly. Everybody, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
You're more than welcome. And audience, you do see that we provided some nice beverages for everybody, make everybody comfortable, right?
And I drank the whole first segment. No, I didn't.
Yeah, she's cut off already. All right. So what is EX Summit or X Summit? Stefan, give us the vision and the passion that you have. Tell us what EX Summit is.
Yes, EX stands for employee experience, such as CX for customer experience. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is to bring a brand and customer experience angle to the employee and employee engagement discussion versus a traditional human resources angle.
So we understand that employee culture is a very important thing to pay attention to, not only just for HR and HR purposes of, but I mean, getting the most out of your investment with the employees, as well as being able to create a mission and be able to create career paths for employees. I mean, we're in a place now where as much as you are investing in employees, employees are investing in you as a company and your brand, right? So no longer is there a place where companies can just do the minimum viable product of a company. They have to engage, and they have to be able to see where their employees want them to move, right?
Yes. Yeah, talent acquisition is a very competitive space, right? And even more so in a city like Indianapolis, where it's a big city, and we have to compete not only with the local talent here, but also with cities like Chicago, cities on the West Coast, on the East Coast, actually who are pulling talents from Central Indiana, right? So the goal is really for the companies to think of their organizations and employer or employment brands, to really develop their brands, not just focus on the product or the services they sell, but also on the space they offer for their employees or employees to be.
The physical space, the mission, there's so many different factors to pay attention to, right?
Oh, you bet. I mean, we are finding that there's a different management style from folks who maybe joined the workforce 20 years ago than folks who joined the workforce 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they're so dramatically different that it's almost like you can feel it in the room when one management style meets the other. We would like to. I've been told, and I believe this, that generally people are motivated, but they're not always inspired. And we were looking for management talent who can inspire. And when you find that, people will go above and beyond. But it's not who goes above and beyond for somebody they don't like. Very few people.
Right.
We're not working for the paycheck. We have a lot of options. You know, as people who are in their 20s, and we want to be inspired by not only the business, but the person we report to every day who is guiding us.
Well, company culture has become so important. I mean, it's when you think about millennials right now, millennials are driven by company culture, because if they're not getting what they need, what fulfills them, then they're not going to stay with the company very long. If they can find somebody else with a culture that better gels with them, they're going to leave. So I know company culture is a huge focus of this event too. So how did you all come to, you know, put the focus on that? Because I know it is so timely and so important right now. Yeah, so something I would say at Aperio that we focus on is when we think of employee experience, it goes to how do you work and how are you productive on a day-to-day basis? And so providing tools and technologies where you can work anywhere and you have that experience that, you know, people are really looking for, which is how do I work with really great and smart people, but how do I do it in a way that works for me? So I think for us, that's a huge part of our culture and that experience and how do they do a great job for their customers on a day-to-day basis.
I have a bit of a question when it comes down to the employer-employee relationship and the accountability of the employer and the accountability of the employee, okay? And I'm going to actually reference a little bit of a different landscape when it comes down to online reviews because social media, bear with me, there's a relationship here.
He'll get there.
I'll get there. Online reviews and what we've been dealing with in the online review space, right? Companies are having to accommodate for the online review environment where anybody and everybody can, they do control the brand of companies now. And their experience, that individual experience, right, regardless of what other, how bad that person's day was prior to the company, it can completely skew their interaction with the company, right? The companies are somewhat beholden to those online reviews. Okay, and they have to make an answer to these. We would love to have social media be a little bit more accountable in that space, but let me liken it to now employee relationships is that how accountable, what kind of expectations should employers hold employees accountable to for what they expect from culture, investment, and those type of relationships? Because as an employer, now that you can certainly see that the employers have had to match a lot of wants, a lot of needs to be able to satisfy cultural needs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You see where I was going here?
I see. I know where you're going. I see.
I'd be happy to.
But from an employee standpoint, what concessions should employee, because I mean, if there is an old dog type of work mentality, right?
Sure.
There's a lot of hoops that they have to jump through to be able to get into this new cultural oasis that employees are looking for.
Yeah, and I just would argue that I would never want to set an expectation that Lesson Lee is an oasis because, you know, what you see on Instagram yeah. or what you hear about, that's the tip of the iceberg. Sure, what sure, keeps sure. the iceberg up is all the hard work we do below that, all the difficult conversations we have, all the tough days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's really important that we set expectations. And we're not going to put the tough days on Instagram. That's just not what it's built for.
Right.
But you have to let people know coming in the door.
However, those could go viral too.
Yeah, we're not looking for that. I think what I'm getting at is the expectation I like to set with employees is the same patience that you give to yourself, the same leeway that you give yourself around you're not perfect and you make mistakes.
Right.
You give that to the business too because the business is not some entity in the sky. It's a bunch of people and they're just as prone to mistakes as you are. And if you can't roll with the punches, you're going to have a tough time at this business because there is no doubt that we're going to make a mistake. And if you hold us, you kind of put our hand to the wall and nail it to it because of that mistake, that stinks. It's not how you treat yourself. It's not how you treat somebody who's your friend. Mm-hmm. And we're working hard, so we're going to make mistakes. We're moving fast. We're going to make mistakes. And I just love setting the expectation with people. I don't know if it always works, right. but I sure hope it does.
I appreciate you taking that and going with it because that's what I was looking for is that companies can, I mean, they're going to experiment with how they can help employees and their life balance or life work balance and their appreciation of their work environment, right? But there has to be some level of forgiveness and latitude because they're all trying to get to the same place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would add in, Max, you were talking about expectations up front. I think that's key. So if you set the right expectations up front
right.
and people know here's what it means to be an Aperian and here's what it means that I'm signing up for this, that is key because if they come in the door and 30 days later, the expectations are way off. That's not good for you. That's not good for the employee. So I think that piece is key. I think how you give outlets for giving feedback in the company is huge. So do you have ways that you're doing that and how transparent is that? Because otherwise then team members are going to go other ways to find those avenues. Right. And then I know one thing that's been great for us. So we'll use Glassdoor as one of those social media outlets. I respond to every single review that comes in to Glassdoor. So we're giving the opportunity for someone to reach out to myself directly with my email address out on there. You know, that puts it out there.
Yep.
But it's also responding to every single review, no matter what, positive or constructive. So yep. Those are a couple of things that have been really helpful for us.
And the ramifications of that is that the future employees see your brand and your communication style in the midst of either positive or negative, right? So, I mean, on the internet and in the social wake that we have here, there's even more human resource management and communication needs that are out there. So getting back to the summit, sorry, I just kind of took a beeline here. But get back to the summit. The summit is coming up. It's on Butler University campus from 8 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. on Thursday, August 3rd. Tell us a little bit more about the event and who's speaking and what attendees will expect to see.
Well, we have two of our speakers here, right. Julia and Max. The goal is really to have a mix of HR-related roles as well as marketers, operations, customer experience people, because the employee experience as a whole is a collective effort between all those different components. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be driven only by HR or by leadership. Everybody has a stake and a role in designing and defining the employee experience. The goal is really to attract more people outside of the traditional HR space. Right, so the more marketers, operations, customer experience people we have, the better the conversation and discussion will be.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So some of the speakers that are going to be there besides Julie and Max are?
We'll have Jeffrey Moss coming from Chicago. He will kick off the events. Then we'll have three different types of breakouts. Mm-hmm. We'll have one that is highly collaborative with Jenny Banner leading a workshop on the a new employee onboarding journey.
Right.
We'll have a panel discussion where Julie will be participating, and it will be really about actually who is driving or who should be driving the employee experience. Should it be HR? Should it be marketing? Should it be customer experience? We'll have some marketers with Tiffany Soder from Element 3.
Yep, big fan.
We'll have a millennial representative with Jeremy Miller. Right. We'll have... and then we'll have another, we'll have Randy Stocklin from One Click Ventures right. as well, who just won the Mira for the best culture in 2017.
Right? Fantastic.
And I'm missing someone.
That's okay.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah.
Randy will do great.
And then we'll have the third breakout session will be people giving 20-minute talks. We'll have someone from Structural, here part of High Alpha, Chip House, and then we'll have Jason Seiden, who actually started Brand Emperor at Developer Town and then sold it to The Muse a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. It will be coming from Chicago.
Very cool.
And we'll have someone from Student Connections as well.
Good for you for remembering all that.
That was a lot.
I know it's your conference, but that
no
doesn't
notes.
Mean it comes to mind. Yeah.
and we get Max, too, to conclude the events.
I am thrilled to be there. We're going to be talking about candor. That's my job. And
I believe in that.
You believe in it?
Candor or frank?
I think everybody believes in it. I don't know a whole lot of people who are very good at doing it, and man, do we need more of it. I mean, I was thinking the other day, if I was ever lucky enough to make any change to the... Secretary of Education's role. I'm not talking about any existing Secretary of Education.
Sure.
But let's say we get somebody in there who cares deeply about changing the lives of children, challenging them to put together a curriculum that helps kids understand how to identify when they need to have a difficult conversation, then how to carry out the difficult conversation and follow up on it.
Absolutely.
We just are not taught that, and especially in the Midwest. Being frank, it's either on the coast where you might be direct but maybe hurtful,
right.
or it's in the Midwest where it's like, oh, you're fine, and then somebody walks out of the room and they're like, that was awful.
Yeah,
it's like, there's a middle point there.
Yeah, you
where
can't
we
be frank and polite. You're either frank or polite.
Yeah,
in the
so
Midwest.
it's being tactfully direct, mm-hmm. And understanding, establishing that you care for that person. because that's not going to work otherwise. Right. If you know that we don't get along, which we definitely do, but let's say let's say we don't get along, and I come to you with some frank feedback, you're like, screw that guy.
Right.
You know, so we have to have that relationship established. Anyhow, we'll kind of dig into some reasons why I think that's super important and some ways to build it. There is no silver bullet. We've been working and building it for a while, and Lessonly probably has a third of the difficult conversations that it should. You know, it's just like it's so hard, and it never gets easy.
It really is, but it's much more beyond an employer-employee relationship or even employee. And these are it's very similar, like the Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University, the stuff that you're never taught in school about investments, about what it means to actually balance a checkbook, right? All of a sudden, I mean, there's so many adults that become adults without those skills. These skills about how to actually have frank conversations, right, and how to be able to realize what hurtful language is and how to keep morale going, right, between your friends and between colleagues. But on top of that, even we have got a great friend, Lisa Mitchell, over at Power Body Language, literally knowing how to read body language, because body language is so incredibly important whenever you're meeting and actually communicating. In fact, the auditory, the speech itself, is the third tier. It's body language, it's eye contact, and then you're actually processing what somebody's saying. Those skills are just not taught. And to be able to actually have that type of relationship and be able to have that fostered inside of an organization, I mean, it's immense. It's powerful. And that's some of that social fabric that keeps employees with you, right?
Yeah. Max, I'm looking forward to that session. I think employee experience, that's such a huge tie. People leave a company because they're not getting good feedback and they're not growing. And that ties into that greatly. So I think that's going to be a really good topic. And I hope I actually get to sit in on that. So one of the reasons I was really excited to participate in this event is at Aperio, we talk daily about what we call the virtuous cycle and the tie between customer experience and employee experience, and they're not separate. So this was just a part of my day-to-day, and the fact that it's not something that we just talk about in HR and what that means within the fabric of our company. So for me, that was where that panel session was a perfect fit, and I'm excited to kind of dig into that more.
Yeah, a common theme between all the different talks, presentations, workshops, and even the episodes that I do on the EX podcast is Max was talking about candor, transparency, vulnerability of leadership, trying to do new things, test things. If it doesn't work out, it just doesn't work out. Let's move on to something else.
Right.
It's really important into designing that employee experience.
Well, and I know one of your personal missions is to disrupt status quo and to help companies and organizations really find their differentiator between their competitors. Tell us more about that and why you're driven by that mission.
Sure. Well, no, the focus has been on the customer experience for the last, let's say, maybe 2 decades, let's say 20, 25 years, right? And that was really the differentiator. That was really the differentiator on the customer side for customers to be loyal to a brand.
Mm-hmm. It still is.
It still is, but it's
I know what you mean, but
it's not enough.
Yeah, sure.
It's not enough, especially when it comes to talents. Now there's so much versatility in the talent space where people can easily switch jobs and they can work remotely, et cetera.
Right.
That it becomes more and more as a differentiating factor for the companies to not only attract but retain top talent as well.
I just love that it's a trend because, you know, you say, hey, it's a big factor. We're in a pretty laggard space with the learning software. There's a lot of LMSs, learning management systems, that have been around for 20 years.
Right.
And people come to Lessonly and they just can't believe that they're told, like, we're not going to be able to get that done for 3 days because other people will, like, just go dark on you and then they pop back up later when it's ready. And it's like, oh, 2 weeks later, they haven't gotten any feedback.
Right.
So just the honesty, the transparency is still a way we can differentiate as a business. And it's awesome because I get to be in a space where it's like you just treat people like humans and people are like, no way. And I mean that like as a it's pretty neat. We just got lucky about falling into a space where that is not common.
Mm-hmm.
So we hopefully get to help people level up because we got competitors who just don't care about that at all. They're like, I sold you something for very little money. Leave me alone. But nobody wants to nobody wants to engage with a company that way.
Well, it's about having those frank conversations, right? Even with a customer is that, well, can you do this? Well, I mean, the default answer is yes, we can.
Right.
And then everybody scrambles and goes, how the hell do we do that?
Right.
Right.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. But being able to actually broadcast that back over to the client going, yeah, we don't know exactly. We know where we're going, but we have the talent to be able to do it.
Yep.
What a fresh perspective and a trust build right there.
And a gentleman named Corey Kime runs the client experience team. He is highly formal. So when he's like, this isn't going to happen, his initial instinct is to say, it isn't going to happen. And people don't have that muscle like he does. So he has the expectation with his team, which has been built out now. It's, you know, about 10 people that is what we do. If it's not going to happen, you tell somebody it's not going to happen
quickly.
And they love it. Yeah. You know, people don't always love that it's not going to happen. Don't get me wrong. But they appreciate the honesty.
Yep.
And he as a leader set the expectation, which created the team's culture of, if we can't do it, don't drag people along, you know?
All right.
Don't mince your words. Like, if it's the case, then let's just be frank and say it.
I'm going to bring Simon Sinek into the mix here. All right. So, start with why, right? People buy into brands not for what they do or how they do it, right? But why they're doing what they're doing. And what you're talking about, that level of transparency, it pulls the veil away, and this is why we are who we are. And all of a sudden, brands fall into line, and they'll trust beyond what the services are that you're providing. It's be able to have those relationships. So relationships are everything when it comes down to the B2C, to the B2B realm. You have to have those trust factors. But when it comes down to the B2E, that business to employer, you have to have that same fabric. You can't ignore that. And this is what you're talking about, right?
Yes. You know, I heard a couple of months ago Airbnb's head of employee experience saying about what they did at Airbnb when he came on board a couple of years ago. And basically the way he sees it is the organization defines a framework for the employee experience, and that it's up to the employees to decide within that framework where their own experiences is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking the other day, it's exactly, let's take Nike as a brand, right? Just do it, mm-hmm. right? That's basically the definition of, that's the framework. And within that framework, every one of us is just doing it the way we want to do it,
right?
And that's the way for this should be the same way for the employee experience, right? The employees should have a framework that they can't really go beyond, right? Those are the basic rules.
Mm-hmm. The cage.
And within that, employees can define their own experiences. If I'm in accounting and I'm 55 years old, I may have different aspirations than if I'm on the customer service side and I'm 25 years old, right?
Right. No, I'd agree with you. I getting back into the employer head, I still do. I do concern myself with the unwarranted expectation or the unspoken expectation from an employee, because those can get sideways in an employee's mind. And if they're not communicated, right, you'll never know what you did. It's just, they don't have that employee anymore, or they're a bit toxic because something's not being fed, right?
You bet. We're going to take a little bit from the last generation, a little bit from the current generation, and we're going to mix them together, because neither of them, they're both extremes in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
They're built by whatever, you know, the surrounding things that happen to people, how they were raised, and neither of them are perfect. So letting people work wherever they want all the time, I don't think that's a great idea.
Right.
Here's the deal. Setting the guard.
Don't you look at me over there. What does he do? He looks over at me.
Well, hey, I don't mean to throw you under the bus. But as the team gets bigger, that gets really, really hard. We are just all about setting the guardrails.
Absolutely.
You know, I heard the cage as an example. We just call it the guardrails.
Right.
You spell it out.
It's more like a guideline than a rule.
You
right?
bet. Yeah. But stay in the bumpers, man. Stay in the bumpers.
Absolutely.
And if you don't write down what your bumpers are, how do you expect people to know?
Right.
And a lot of companies don't write them down, but then they're like, oh, you're not doing it right. And then the employee can go, well, what does right look like? Because you've never spelled it out for me.
Yep,
the handbook doesn't cover all of these. All of these. You're never going to get every minute detail. You just aren't. You know, like, you're just not going to be able to document everything.
Right.
But doing your best to continue to get better about documenting the guardrails is the employer's job, and it helps the employee understand, are they meeting the mark?
And if the employees are actually working with the employer to actually define those guardrails, then you got buy-in, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's where the experiment really leads us, is that unless the employee has a way to be able to communicate and have it seen, because we have the employee contract, which is the financial obligation. You have the HR, which is literally the what happens if, you know, it's just the oh shit moment. Forgive my expression, right?
Contingency.
It's contingency. Yeah, well, I like my phrase better. But it's a contingency, right?
Your phrase was great.
You should start using that.
But it's that employee relationship experience contract, right? Of okay, what do you want to get out of this career path, and how can we help you get there? And then have that defined. If I really want to do this from a career escalation, but what I really want to see is the work-life balance. If I want to be able to have some flex time, this, that, and the other, and you just can't be a policy that's inflexible. You've got to be able to
be agile
and be able to have a one-to-one relationship for each and every employee, right?
This Amen.
This is a therapy session for me, by the way. So Inside Strategics, we actually are experimenting with a lot of things because I'm actually an old school punch the clock.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, exactly.
An old school.
And I put in the time at the office because that's where the work gets done, right? We've got a lot of millennial mindsets. We have a lot of younger generation that are working here, and this is the experiment. We actually have 2 days that's remote work from home days, right? And you better believe that goes against every grain.
Saturday and Sunday?
Exactly, yes. No. Wait. Yes, we can do that.
Don't tell them that. No, but it's working.
It is absolutely working because it gives empowerment to the employees. We're also sprint focused, so we've got our locked in tasks for a couple of weeks. Everybody knows what to burn down. But it is a healthy give back to employees that you don't have to be here to work, right? You're doing work for the clients wherever you want to, and it gives that additional latitude to the employees to have that new experience with their employer.
Well, and we're blessed in this industry that we don't have to be behind one desk in front of one computer all the time. In digital marketing, we can be anywhere, and that's the beauty of it.
And so, I'll still be at my desk.
I know you will. We know where to find you. Yeah, so I think that's the big thing is how you started. Right. You have to be open to change and evolve and listen to that feedback over time and what makes sense based on your brand, that, you know, the customer brand that ties to your employment brand. And kind of like Max said, there's guardrails and guidelines that make sense for you, but you know what those are, but you have to evolve over time when you hear feedback. So I know that's something, so I'll give Amplify a big plug here, but they're looking at agile engagement and they're saying you're going to look at this quarterly and you're going to focus on different areas that have different feedback and that change maybe a quarter later or 6 months later and talk about that at the time of versus waiting a year or two later to adjust and hear that something isn't working. So I think it's being open to that and knowing you have to do that, and that's only going to make your experience better.
Excellent. Yes, sir.
We're now at the size of team where there's sort of 70 people in the business. And in the early days, if there was a decision made, everybody kind of said, oh, that applies to me too. So if one manager said to the contributor, here's what we're going to do, the other people kind of were like, well, I probably get to do that too. Well, now we have departments that have their own styles. It's like, you know, subcultures. And one of the things that I just found interesting is when one of those subcultures makes a change, or gives a leeway or maybe pulls something back in, the other subcultures go, well, does that apply to me too?
Right.
And just to reinforce that the manager of the team gets to manage the team. And if another manager's decision affects that manager, that's probably not a very good thing. Like, they each have their own teams with their own people with their own subcultures.
Right.
So it's just, I guess what I'm getting at is that is the expectation as you grow really changes, and to have to continue to communicate that it used to be that we had one policy. Now as the teams get bigger, each team has their own policy, and it has to be that way because I hold that person accountable to a goal. And if I tell them they have to do something a certain way that they don't think, you know, will allow them to hit their goal, well, then I'm responsible if they don't.
Right.
Otherwise, if I let them say, hey, you reign supreme, get it done, there's no excuses, that means everybody's going to have their own recipe. But that has just been a weird transition thing for us that I hope was worth talking about.
No, absolutely. No. That's the thing. But, I mean, to your point, Max, is that that's undiscovered country for so many companies. I mean, just that, and literally, that probably scared a lot of business owners because there's a system. You adhere to the system, right? And this is old dog mentality.
That's relinquishing control.
It is really, but giving empowerment, right? So that's how I translate that. See,
very good.
I'm doing very good.
You're hearing all of it.
One big question as well is, you know, there's a lot of segmentation on the customer side. Why should we have to treat the employees as the same bunch? Why can we segment employees, whether by teams, by functions, right? Mm-hmm. Again, someone in sales may not have the same aspirations than someone in accounting or right. on the production floor. Why do we have to treat the employees as the same bunch?
Absolutely. How can we put them in a cage and actually have betting pools against them, right?
Well, it's like it's like parenting, I imagine. You don't parent every child the same. You've got your little nuances, and you treat them differently and all of that. So it's doing the same thing for your employees. Makes total sense to me.
Are you working on that?
Not yet. Okay. Don't freak him out. He's probably watching. Don't scare him. Ryan, it's okay.
It probably wasn't my place to ask, but I figured, married, and then kids are on the mind.
The next step.
Twin six-year-olds, and they're not even the same, and so I would love to tell you that I treat them both the same, but they have their unique expectations of me, too. So,
I have four kids, and I'm just going to stop there.
Read between the lines.
And read between the lines. Absolutely. So regarding the summit and who's actually helping you move awareness of the summit, because absolutely, I mean, this conversation is a conversation that Indiana needs to happen, and you also do it in Cincinnati as well. I mean, these are ongoing conversations, ongoing. Just bring everybody to the table and talk about some of these frank conversations that don't often get talked about. I mean, this is where the employer can actually recharge, right? And get some inspiration, because I went to your summit last year. And it was a standing room only. It was a fantastic thing. Me and Mark Ertl, the creative director here, we got some great ideas to bring back home. Who's actually helping you become aware that your listeners and your viewers become aware of, from a sponsorship standpoint? Who's actually alongside with you and actually lifting you up?
Yeah, you've got some great sponsors.
Yeah, you really do.
Yeah, we have. So you guys, right?
Sure.
You're going to help us sponsor the events.
Absolutely. We're going to be there.
Events, and thank you so much.
Absolutely.
We have Element 3 as well.
Yep.
And we have Aperio as well supporting us. And we have some community partners as well, Centric, TechPoints, the Indianapolis chapter of the American Marketing Association.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. And you've seen a lot of buy-in for this is the third one that you've done, correct?
Yes.
So there's a continual thread of the sponsors that are actually championing the event, as they are listening to their employees. They are wanting to be able to plug in and be able to change some of the ecosystem away from a standard type of business environment, right?
Right. And the goal is really to, first of all, to focus on local speakers, right? Local companies sharing their stories so mm-hmm. that our audience can relate to those stories. Mm-hmm. And we have the chance to have different company sizes speaking at the event as well, from Aperio and Cummins. Mm-hmm. I had forgotten someone. It was Carlin Kurtz from Cummins will be on the panel along with Julie. So we have listenly 70 mm-hmm. person company. So we have that large breadth of company sizes and different sectors of industry represented as well, so that our audience can take and learn and apply whatever they hear and they want to take back home from the summit.
I think we've forgotten one major thing.
Okay.
How do we get tickets?
Yep.
Yes, you go to exsummit.com/Indianapolis mm-hmm. and you will see the entire lineup of speakers, biographies and synopsis and the click button to register.
Perfect.
And for our listeners, and certainly for Edge listeners here, we want to make sure we give them a special discount. Is if you put in the code, what is the code?
Edge5. Edge all cap. Five.
And any of our Edge listeners can get a discount of $5 off their ticket. And that's fantastic. Thank you so much for that offering. And we're certainly going to let all of our listeners know here. So how you can connect with EX Summit is on Twitter at @EX_Summit, yes. Right? LinkedIn is Vincent Stefan, right? So let's go around the room and how we reach out to all the different brands represented here as well.
Okay. You can reach out any way that kind of works for you, Julie Barker. So, or you can reach out at Aperio or Julie Barker 1018. So on Twitter, LinkedIn, Julie Barker, or again, you can get us at GoAperio or at Aperio.
Fantastic.
Good memory.
That was well done.
Yeah.
I am Max Yoder across everything, like no space, no underscore. There's never spaces, but you know what I mean? No dashes. and then Lesson Lee is @LessonLee on Twitter. And we'd love for you to look at pictures and read tweets.
Yeah. Do all the socials, and we certainly ask for the watchers and the listeners of the podcast to actually touch base with their upper management. And I mean, this is a absolute fantastic opportunity to be able to share with your employer. Say, you know what? Hey, could you send somebody over there? This is a really great experience to hear from thought leaders that are passionate about employee experience, because it is. Here's the thing: it's so easy to do. Right, and it means so much to employees. Just being able to pay attention and make small changes. So these small changes are what employees are looking for on a regular basis. And the signal that you send as an employer, not attending to certain things, is deafening.
Well, when you think about this one morning for this event, you could grow in the right direction. I mean, you can go there and gain so much insight. You can have ideas. You can go back to your upper management and with all of these ideas and present, we're not doing all of this. This is what we could be doing. Let's find what's good for us. So I think this would be really valuable for a lot of different roles and different companies. I think it would be great.
I would just love a ton of people to come. Please go.
All the people, please.
All
go.
The peoples.
Let make it another glass door for Indy. If you don't see a company listed here, don't go work for that company.
Oh, crap. Don't say that. Fantastic. Well, Stefan, any final message of just from the founder of EXM? I mean, you certainly have visions for the future. Is this going to be a regular annual event here?
Yes, I just got confirmation today that we'll go to Minneapolis on the 3rd of October.
Right.
We're working on confirming speakers. It will be in partnership with a structural here in Indianapolis, but they have there are two main executives are based in Minneapolis.
Yep.
And then we also have the EX podcast available on iTunes.
Yep.
We had one episode with Max and with Steve Pruden, who is he your boss?
Yeah.
Okay. So those actually are available on iTunes already.
Fantastic. All right. Well, check out all the things that are coming out of it.
All the things. Check them all out.
Check them all out over EX Summit. Thank you.
One thing to conclude, sorry.
Yeah.
The summit is not only for employers or employees' representatives. Okay. It's also for employees.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you have a passion as an employee around employee experience, just go and register to the event as well, and hopefully we'll see you there.
Yeah, and that's a very good declaration there, because you can get kind of mired in from a management standpoint, but this is... Employees need to know what the tapestry is from an employee experience.
Well, and culture really should be built from the bottom up, not the top down. So start with the employees, get them activated and ready to learn, and then they can take it back.
There it is. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We're going to go ahead and wrap up. Make sure that you go to the August 3rd EX Summit, starting at 8 in the morning to 12:15. Make sure that you also get tickets over at the Eventbrite. Go to exsummit.com/Indianapolis to be able to get your ticket. Use EDGE5 to be able to get a $5 discount code. And we are certainly going to be there and be able to help lift and advertise the EX Summit prior to the event. Give us a shout and tell us your employee experience as well, because we certainly want to give some good information back to the speakers as well as the founder. So thank you so much for time watching today and listening on the podcast. And be sure on a regular basis, hey, thank you for our guests from Indiana Brewers Guild as well. Be sure to choose local and choose local often. Focus on Indianapolis, because there's a huge amount of work and passion that's coming out of Indianapolis. And we're here every week to be able to showcase that for you. So signing off, thanks so much for Edge of Indy, and cheers. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.